As you think about where we've been, you may remember that Acts 8 has been our focus of study. We've been talking about Simon the Sorcerer. And a couple weeks back, we said that we wanted to deal with restoring the fallen. That may be something that we explore a little more fully later in the year, but this is, for now, because of Acts chapter 8, an introductory lesson. When you deal with this, there are a lot of things that can take place. We have a sheet before us, 40 points that we want to discuss in the sheet. Maybe this will span two class periods. But if you'll look down to point number 32 and just through number 40, as you're dealing with people who have fallen away, you can have all kinds of interesting things happen. You need to be prepared for a number of things that might be said to you, and these will be some of the things that we discuss at some point. For example, picking up with number 34, I bounced a contribution check, and everybody was told about it. You think that can happen in a contribution? That can happen in a contribution. Do you think that can happen in a congregation? Sure. And you think that there might be some people, maybe a weak Christian, who was so embarrassed by that they just stopped coming? It's happened. So how do you deal with that? Somebody else says, my child was bullied by other children and we're never going to be back. We have bullying. That's a big problem in our world. Sometimes that can happen in a congregation. How's that going to be dealt with, especially if that has encouraged a person to never return again? You have an unloving church. Nobody talks to me because I'm not part of a clique. Now, if you're hearing that kind of thing as you go to visit someone who has fallen away, that's tough to hear. And the first thing that you might be inclined to do when you hear that kind of thing is do what?
Defend yourself.
Yeah, defend yourself or defend the congregation. So I'm giving you these in advance so when we get to them, you can actually have had a chance to think about them in advance. I work 6 days a week. Sunday's my only day of rest. You think that's true for some people?
Absolutely.
Better believe it. And if you're going to talk to someone who's fallen away, that very well might be what you hear. Somebody says, I just don't fit in there. I just don't feel like I'm a part of the group for whatever reason. Maybe because I have a different kind of job. Maybe because my education is too much, too little. Maybe because we're accustomed to be part of a large congregation in the past, whatever it might be. I did something really bad and don't believe God can forgive me. I no longer believe in God. Or I become a devil worshiper. Now, the last one's probably not real likely, but I threw that in there just kind of for good measure. You can hear some things that you might not be prepared for. So when you start talking to people or trying to figure out how to talk to people when it comes to apostasy, be prepared for the unexpected because you just never know exactly what's on the other side of the door. All right, let's go back and look at our sheet. Point number one, give some reasons why Christians fall away. We just kind of highlighted some of these, but some of the others over the years that you've heard. Why have Christians fallen away?
I was hurting really bad for money, and I was just working all the time. And if I would have had faith more, I think I needed, well, I was new to this area, and I didn't know a lot of people, and I guess I didn't have enough faith in God, but it was because of money. But then 5 years, the kids talked me into, Mom, we got to get back. Mm-hmm. And that's when we started coming.
Right. Sometimes,
but I did.
Yeah, the moorings or the ties are maybe not enough. Not enough to the congregation, maybe not enough when it comes to God and faith, but there's the connection is just not as solid as it needs to be. And that's true for a lot of people, especially when faith gets tested. So, good answer. Anybody else?
Health issues. It seems like Sunday morning, the aches and pains or the reactions or whatever set in. I just don't feel very good. Mm-hmm. I don't think I can sit through that.
Sunday is that day that's unique. It kind of throws off for a lot of people the schedule. Because if you're used to getting up very early, you're getting up later, or vice versa, there's some people. You've got someone who's disabled or someone who's retired. By the time 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock rolls around, that might be the time that they're just kind of normally getting up and around, and maybe they're kind of a late nighter and so forth. So that happens with some people as well. And it's very easy to get into that habit of we're just not going to come or we don't feel like we can come today. Therese?
I don't get anything out of it.
All right. Yeah, and that might be true. Someone says the singing is depressing. Someone says I don't learn anything from the preaching. They pray for the same things. We always sing the same songs. The communion is boring. And, I just don't get anything out of worship. Well, again, that might be something that comes up and something that has to be discussed.
Mm-hmm. They you know, you, you know, there's a group that does a whole lot, mm-hmm. and they just, they burn out after a while. And then they try to slow down on that, but it goes way too far, and they fall away.
Yeah, even with larger congregations, the larger you are, typically the more you do. And the more you do, obviously, the more that you need help with as far as money and people. So it's not just a smaller congregation. They have that issue, too. You've got your core. So ideally, congregation, we try to do that here, where we try to make sure that we spread things around to the point where nobody gets so burdened that they just feel like they're getting crushed. But burnout can be a problem, a real issue. Anything else? Why people, Tim?
Some people use the church as a means of entertainment, or try to, and when they come and they don't get entertained, you know, they want to go somewhere else, but they can't.
Yeah. That solid mooring, again, is lacking. It's not really commitment to Christ. It's not a faith-based faith. It's going to be, I'm having fun, the fun stops, and I'm done. Anybody else?
Did you say somebody hurt my feelings?
No, but that would be another reason that people would sometimes quit coming. They offended me. They hurt my feelings. I didn't like the sermon. The sermon stepped on my toes. Or this person said this in a Bible class, and I thought it was directed against me. The list just goes on and on and on for why people fall away. All right, we've got a couple passages here. Luke chapter 15 and verse 32, we want that for a couple of reasons, and then we also want to have Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1 ready after that. Who wants to be your helper for Galatians 6, 1 in a bit? Galatians 6, 1, all right, that'll be Carol, thank you. And who wants to help with Luke chapter 15 and verse 32? Luke 15, verse 32. We want two answers. All right, Don, we want two answers from that. When a Christian leaves the faith, he is something. And then our desire and goal should be to have them. Let's figure out what the answer to that is, too. All right, if you're ready, Luke 15, 32.
It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found.
Thank you. When a Christian leaves the faith, just like the son of Luke chapter 15, he or she is
dead,
spiritually disconnected from Christ. That's a problem. That's a real issue. Our hope then is to revitalize them, to bring them back. And that can be a challenge for a lot of reasons. That second point there, number four, our desire and goal should be to have them return, or we might use the word found, depending on the translation. And that's our goal. We want to restore them. Well, that's also what Paul talked about in the book of Galatians, Galatians chapter 6. But as we look at points 9 and 10, if we're going to go out and restore someone, correct a problem, fix a matter, we want to make sure that we have the right spirit. Let's see what we've got in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1.
Brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted.
Okay, let's think about that, and let's also get somebody lined up for Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 15. Who wants to take care of that in a couple minutes? Ephesians 4, verse 15. All right, that'll be Jeff in a little bit. Let's ask our question. Points 10 and 11, we need the spirit of, again, what's the right answer?
Gentleness.
And how might or might we not have that spirit?
You mean like if we're
Well, okay, that would be a way to not have it. You go, you know, well, I would never do that you did. You have kind of a proud, boastful spirit, an arrogant spirit. That would certainly be the wrong thing in light of Galatians 6:1. What else can we say? Trying to reach someone, you don't want to have this haughty spirit. You don't want to go in there with the wrong attitude. Make sure that you have a spirit of gentleness. How would you do that or not do that?
Well, everybody makes mistakes.
Okay.
Everybody has said something at some time that they regret saying. And everybody's had to apologize for something they said or did.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, you know, you can let them know that you're just part of that club. You know, you've done it. You regret it, and you know that they regret it, but they shouldn't let that keep them from church.
Mm-hmm. To tie in with that, remember what we said earlier about going in, you have your backup, person starts to say this, and the first reaction is what? I'm going to defend him. You know, you're talking about my wife, you're talking about my child, you're talking about my church family, you're talking about my elders, my preacher, whatever it might be. Well, that's probably not going to be too gentle, you know, if you're ready to go in there and just take out the axe. What about what Bonnie mentioned a few minutes ago. Somebody says, you know, I've been where you are.
I've been what?
I've been where you are.
Oh.
You know, I have followed that path. I can understand. Now, maybe the exact reasons are slightly different, But practically, we have been at the same point together, different times. But I know what you are. You know, think a person might understand that?
Yeah.
I can sympathize. I can empathize with you. What else when we think about a spirit of gentleness, trying to restore the fallen? This is the sixth time I come to see you. Might that be true?
Yes.
Yeah?
But you don't say
it. That's probably not going to win you any points. So, watch the words, right? Watch the tone. Watch the words. Okay, that can be another thing. You know, the old blood vessels are just starting to really pulsate, and you can start seeing the veins beginning to pop. So, again, there's a lot that goes into that. Anything else before we move on to point 12? Okay, let's take a look at that. And we have here Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 15. Jeff, we're going back to you. Okay, spirit of gentleness, Galatians 6 and verse 1. Now Paul says you need to, as you're dealing with people, speak what? Speak the truth, and speak it how? Speak it in love. Do you think it's possible to go see someone who is an apostate and not speak the truth? Sure. You might just say, well, had a great visit with you. You know, we talked about the weather and the cows and, you know, everything, but we didn't deal with the real matter. Well, that might not be a bad thing for maybe an initial visit or maybe a couple of visits, but eventually, what do you have to deal with? You've got to deal with the problem. Trace?
Some people don't think they'd be welcome back either, and we need to make sure that they know if they come back, we're going to welcome them and not judge them.
That's a fantastic thought, because we're not there just to say that there's a problem. We're also there to say what? There is a solution. And part of the solution is your being restored. Remember? Restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1. We want you to come back. Well, we'll do the same thing with Ephesians 4 that we did with Galatians chapter 6. How can we or how can we not speak the truth in love?
Instead of those same attitudes.
Okay. Pride, haughtiness, arrogance. Anything else? Speaking or not speaking the truth in love? Well, what if you go to a person and the person says, well, you know, I really messed up. Oh, it's not that big of a deal. You know, you just stole the guy's car. Do you want to downplay a problem? No. I mean, facts are facts. If you steal the guy's car or whatever you did, I mean, okay, yes, that's the truth. You did do that. And there might be a consequence for that. There does need to be repentance from that. This is an issue that has to be discussed. So we don't want to somehow whitewash or diminish what a person did. But at the same time, do you have to go overboard? And it's very easy, I think, to fall into one extreme camp or the other. But try to deal with things as best we can in a factual nature. Anything else when it comes to speaking the truth in love? What's that little rule we talk about sometimes in Matthew chapter 7? It's the golden rule. And what's the essence of that? Treat people as you want to be treated. So if you're going to see this guy who's fallen away from the faith, ideally, in your mind, as you make that visit, you're thinking what? Yes, I could be on the other side of the table. And if I were on the other side of the table, I would want to be treated in this and this way. And the ultimate goal, as we deal with people, is to bring people back. But I'm not convinced that's always the goal that some people have. Some may have what goal? Rather than try to bring the person back, what do they want to do?
They want to win the argument.
Well, and that may not be a bad thing in certain circumstances, but again, our primary emphasis should be redemption. What else might a person want? Win the argument?
They might want to just show their superiority.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to come in and beat you up because I think I can strong arm you somehow. Anything else?
They might want to be able to say, well, I went and visited.
Yes. I think that's the other thing. Well, you know, we knew what they were going to do, and I went, and sure enough, that was exactly how the situation went, and we can just write them off. Well, wait a minute. You know, it wasn't to formally cut them off. It was, again, designed to be redemptive in nature. And if you go with that attitude, what do you think the outcome is going to be? probably what you expect. That's not going to be good. Anything else before we pick up with Jude 22 and 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 20? Jeff? It's like parenting. There's some conversations with kids that are difficult. And if you try to just ignore that, it's not going to go well. It's going to get addressed somehow, and likely it's going to be dealt with in an unpleasant manner because it's been allowed to spiral out of control. So, good thought. Is that it? Okay, let's pick up our Jude 22 reference. Who wants to take care of that in just a minute? Jude verse 22. All right, Steve. And then we'll also take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 20, 1 Corinthians 4, 21. 1 Timothy 5, who wants that 20th verse? All right, Carol. And then let's pick up 1 Corinthians 4, 21 after that. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 21. Done. Okay, let's go back to Jude 22.
And on some have compassion, making a distinction.
What's the key quality there? On some we need to have compassion. Can you think of a case where you would go to someone who's fallen away and you say, I want to show compassion? I really feel compassion for the person.
And sometimes a person is so upset about what they've done that they just feel like they can't go on. Nobody will accept them. You have to show them.
A person who may have come from a battered home and they learned some very bad behavior in the battered home, and that was what life was like for them. And you begin to deal with, they became a Christian, maybe didn't stick with it very long, and then they go back into that and they say, well, this is my background. You have to have compassion for that kind of person. What about on the flip side, though? Someone who grew up in a Christian home, someone who was taught exactly what was right down the line. And then they make a series of choices which are just bang, 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 and they are all bad. And they get second chance after second chance after second chance. You go see that kind of person. How do you feel when it comes to compassion? What's the temptation? You had your 10 chances and, you know, 3 strikes. So it's very, very difficult. On some, very easy to show compassion. With some others that we struggle a lot. But again, the end goal for us, it's not always possible, it's not always achievable, but the end goal for us as a Christian is what? We want to bring people back. You know, as you're thinking about Peter and John in Acts chapter 8, Simon, here's this guy, he's become a Christian, he's, you know, obviously been baptized from what the text says, he's able to spend some time with Philip, he sees what Peter and John are doing, and all of a sudden he comes along and says, hey, Peter, John, I want to buy the gift that you have so I can give the Holy Spirit to people as well. From what we said in previous classes, did he get a pretty good talking to? They were really stiff with him. I mean, they came down hard. The gall of bitterness, the bond of iniquity, and so forth. And yet, you see some compassion there, but they were also people who took a pretty stiff approach. And that's what we see, too, in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 20, talking in this passage about elders. Let's see what we've got there. I think that was you. 5:20, uh-huh.
Okay. Those who continue in sin rebuke in the presence of all, so that the rest also may be fearful of sinning.
Okay, so when we talk about dealing with people, there needs to be compassion, Jude 22. But also, as you look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 20, you find here a passage, again, a specific context, but it balances out a little bit. Do what? Rebuke in the sight of all. So sometimes, even with the child, sometimes you say, do we spend more time and more emphasis on compassion, or are we really going to come down like the wrath of God? And it's going to depend on circumstances, but you do find both in Scripture. And then tying this together is 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 20. Let's see what we've got there. Yeah, 4:21.
What will ye? Shall I come unto you with a rod or in love and in the spirit of meekness?
All right, you have the two choices. Number one, Paul said, I can come with you. Come to you with what? I can come with a rod, and that would be a way of describing what kind of behavior. You're going to get whacked some. This is going to be rough. Or I can come to you in a spirit of love, and there's a compassion that we find in Jude 22. Now, as we think about people who've fallen away, how would you bring those or tie those two things together? When would you use the rod? Well, all right, on the 10th visit, you probably come to about the end of the confession once you get to that point. And that's true. That is true. Even Jesus in Matthew 18, he talked about the progression, you know, one or two, and then eventually you get to the church, and then finally you get to the point where you cut it off. So there does come that point where you say, enough is enough. What else?
But I think that person has made that decision for you,
yeah,
by their actions and the way they continued in or not continued in what they should have.
Don't we see that in the world? Where there is that progression? We start out with some love and some tenderness and some compassion and so forth. Where do you see it in school? How's it work there? Well, the first infraction by a child, is a child expelled? You've got kids in school. How's it work? All right. You guys have kids in school, not that they're troublemakers, but how's it work? Do you know? All right. So there is that progression. And then finally you can be expelled from school. But they don't just take out the stick and start whacking people. You know, you get to the, maybe not the 10th visit, but there's going to be a logical progression there. What about the work world? Huh? Yeah. They've kind of gone from one extreme to the other. So, yeah, they should have balanced it out biblically. What about in the work world? How's it work? All right, generally you're going to find that they're, you're probably going to have a conversation with your immediate boss, and then that can be kicked up to the next level, and then finally there's going to be some kind of termination. But generally there is some kind of policy where several steps are involved, or at least a few steps are involved, before you finally get the boot. And we recognize that that is the right, that is the fair thing to do, because sometimes mild correction is all that someone needs. But there are going to be some other cases where you finally need to get to that rod, 1 Corinthians 4:21, and say enough is enough. And as we're dealing with people, that is the same problem. Now, the issue becomes, you have sometimes some people who want to go in, and with visit number one, what do they want to bring out? Here's the hammer, here's the rod, and we're just going to whack you and crack you. Well, that might work with some people, but chances are that's not going to be the best approach in the majority of circumstances. Then on the other hand, you have what extreme? There's some people who go in, and they never want to, they're just so mousy that they never have any strength, there's never any force, there's never any umph to it. And that person just continues in sin. So I think maybe that's why in Galatians 6:1, Paul said, ye who are spiritual. There needs to be some degree of spiritual understanding there, and hopefully some common sense, so people will be able to work through that in a right, logical manner. Chris?
Well, just like children are different. Some react.
Yes. Yeah.
Basically, I mean, you have the personality, and you have to go with that too. You
know, we have three elders here. Let's suppose that there was an issue that involved you or your family. If one elder shows up on the doorstep, what are you thinking? Yeah, this is hopefully a friendly visit. If two show up, what are you thinking? Yeah, now what did I do? If all three show up, what are you thinking? Yeah. Well, let's hope that's not what they do, but that might be what you're thinking. Don't answer the door because these guys are out in force, right? I'll tell you that, well, I can't say this for every eldership, but I can tell you that at least for some elderships, some thought goes into the fact that who's going to go and how many are going to go. Because if you're sending all three over, the perception might be, we are in deep, deep water. And do we want to open the door? And to go back to what Teresa was saying just a moment ago, you know, you try to use some judgment there rather than, you know, one visit. And maybe that too, if we change the illustration a little bit. If an elder were to say to somebody, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? Okay. Would you maybe perceive that differently than an elder who says, hey, can I come over to your house? Well, yeah, it sounds like if I'm coming over to your house, this is something that's not going to be just a two-minute conversation over here in the foyer somewhere, or let's go behind a closed door. So again, for some people, it would be that 60-second conversation takes care of it. For some other people, step it up a little bit more. And then for some other people, everybody's going to show up, and this might be a repeat visit. So we do recognize those kinds of things. The same thing. What happened in the work world, you might say we're going to have you meet with somebody, or if you're going to have to meet with the full board, then again, you know that that's probably going to be either a meeting where there's a lot of good news, or there's going to be a meeting where there is a lot of bad news. Anything that went at a risk, based on all that we talked about thus far. Jeff?
There's a fine line, but you know, you were using work analogy, so I got to go to the opposite end of your work analogy that you use. There's times where if you're an accountant and you're embezzling money, and it's the first time that you got caught, the
sure.
coming out right away. If you're an IT guy and you're reading the president's emails, I'm only speaking because these really happen where I work. Well, the first one didn't happen where I work, but one of our sister companies. I mean, stuff has to be dealt with right away.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you can't show compassion in a way, but
yeah.
sometimes you have to deal with certain situations right away and in a certain way, too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And sometimes, like you see, you come out with a big stick initially because you just can't let something simmer and rest. I mean, it's got to be nipped in the bud, as old Barney Fife used to say in Andy Griffith. But hopefully people are going to use the right amount of authority there and not go overboard and not use too little. And that's not always an exact judgment, but hopefully they're at least in the right ballpark. So excellent point, too. Anybody else? Okay. Let's go back and see where we left off. Let's take a little bit of a turn. Point number 17, some key actions when it comes to restoring the fallen. One of the interesting words in the New Testament is go. Your translation is going to use that word probably about 200 times, at least in the ASV. It's used more than 200 times. I'd assume that the King James, New King James, ESV would have it in about the same number of places. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 12 is a passage that we want to take a look at, and then also we have somebody lined up for Matthew chapter 7 and verse 6. But who wants to take a look at that reference for us and get it before the class? Matthew 18, verse 12. Gary.
How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth he not leave the 99 and goeth into the mountains and seeketh out which is gone astray?
Thank you. All right, Jesus spoke of going and doing what in Matthew 18 and verse 12? All right, seeking. There's a lost sheep. In this case, we're thinking about someone who was a faithful Christian, and now they have left the faith for some of the reasons that we discussed earlier. Some follow-up questions. Number 20, why do Christians sometimes fail to go and seek the wayward sheep? Marcia, we'll start with you.
They're afraid there might be a confrontation, and they don't like confrontation, and would just rather avoid that.
Okay. If we put it in terms of Matthew chapter 18, if you're going to go out and find that sheep, what might you find? Well, there might be a lion. There might be a bear. Maybe somebody stole. There's going to be a confrontation, either maybe with a human or another animal predator. And it's kind of like, you know, is it really worth sticking my neck out for the one sheep? And the same thing is true when it comes to people. We might find some confrontation from the individual, maybe some of the friends that he or she has, or maybe from some family members, maybe even from some fellow church members. So confrontation is one reason why people are sometimes hesitant. Why else? Sometimes fail. All right. You know, we just don't care. What about in a congregation of 500 people? One slips away. All right. That's possible. Might not notice. Or you think there might be a place which doesn't care. Yeah, we've got enough. And what's one? We don't miss one. Well, do you think the Lord is missing that person? Yes. Do you think the Lord cares about that one person? Yes, and so should we. Whether we have a congregation of 10 or 10,000, each one needs to be valued. Why else would some not go?
It's not my job.
All right. There would be some people that, well, let the preacher go see him. Let the elders go see him. We've got a deacon that kind of works in that area. But again, if we are trying to be the people that God wants us to be, we should be concerned about that as well. There may be a formal program. Yes, you can make a case for the elders being involved. The preacher should have some skills to help in that area, but still each one can offer some assistance. Why else would some not go?
Maybe they're part of the cause.
All right. You know, there wouldn't be much of an incentive because they actually have helped drive the person off. But there's some relationship there between that individual. So that has happened in some places. Any other reasons why some were not willing to go?
They might think that person is just causing trouble.
Yeah. You know, we're better off without them. You think there have been some places where that's been true? We're glad they're gone. Sorry it took so long to get rid of them. So you have some of those sentiments being thought, sometimes being said. But we do have that obligation to go. What excuses have been made for not finding those who have left the faith? It's a little different than the previous questions. All right, somebody says, you know, it'd be a good work. I hope somebody does. I'm praying that that works out. I don't have time. Why else?
They're afraid.
All right, fear is going to be a big thing. Kind of gets back to the confrontation. Why else? Well, somebody talked to them. I talked to them before. I'm sure they're not interested. We can go down and we can give a whole list of excuses why we don't want to go out and try to seek that wayward sheep. You think the fellow who lost one could have come up with a bunch of excuses?
Yeah.
I think that he could have had a laundry list, but he didn't do that. Anything else that you want to add before we look at point 24? Let's take a look at that reference, Matthew 7 and verse 6. Who has it and is ready to read? Matthew 7, verse 6. Bonnie?
Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn again and rend you.
All right, now here's a fun question. Does there come a point in time where we stop looking for the lost or searching for the lost? We call off the search and recovery effort.
Yeah.
Well, that would seem to be the case, Matthew 7, 6. Then when do you decide to call in the troops?
Sometimes they decide for you. That's not your
question. Okay, well that...
but they say, please don't send any calls or call anymore.
All right, let's start with that. Person may say, look, we don't want to hear from you anymore. What do you do if you hear that?
Stop and just pray.
All right, you do need to stop because legally you found some cases in the U.S. and probably outside the U.S. where people have decided to sue you for harassment. And if they have closed the door, well, I mean, they've closed the door, at least for now. So now you can pray.
Well, when they make those wishes known, you need to honor it because you're only enforcing the law.
Yeah. Yeah. People have free will. And if they've decided that they're going to shut off spiritual things from the light, they have that right, don't they? Everybody has the ability to choose. You can still pray. And if you still see them in public, can you be friendly?
Yes.
Yes. Might there be a time where you could encourage them if you happen to meet them, you know, local Walmart or gas station, whatever that might be? Sure.
Carefully,
yes. But again, the idea that we're going to continue to press because they need it, you're going to probably close the coffin a little bit more securely if you try to do that. All right, what else? Let's go back. Teresa helped us a little bit there. Are there some times we need to stop looking?
Yeah, sometimes we need to put it on hold and maybe like you said, somehow, some way, keep in touch with the person and wait for the opportune time to try to bring it up again. Mm-hmm. Whatever that is. I mean, it might be a few years down the road, it might be whatever, but...
Lady says, I'm never going to go. She gets married. A year later has a baby. Opportunity present itself?
Yeah.
Yeah? Pay her a visit in the hospital. Bring her a baby gift. You know, let her be reminded of the fact that you are still a Christian. New chapter in his life is a new chapter in her life or their lives has opened up. And now the door is possibly once again being opened a crack. Therese, and then we'll take Gary's side.
That's a church, though. They're still Christians. They're wayward. But
But we should be praying for that family. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure we are.
Yeah. Well, and that's why classes like this are good, to go back and revisit that topic. It can remind us, and again, maybe depending on how things go, we'll look at this for a few months later in the year to focus our attention, but right now it's because of assignment. But yeah, it is something that can get dropped and just not get the attention it needs to because we start focusing on other things. Gary?
Yeah, once it looks like you've reached a stopping point, something else may have also happened that would require more of your time and energy to work to go find that sheep or some other effort.
Yeah.
So that would be a time to pause.
Yeah. We only have so much time. And if we end up with a dead end, it may be that God is saying, okay, time to kind of put them on a hold, let things simmer there for a little bit, and we can begin working in another area for a period of time. Any other thoughts on that? Jeff, back to you.
This is not bad. What he's talking about, looking for those times to reach back out to them. And unfortunately, one of the most opportune times is a time of crisis or a time of some kind of scare, like cancer or a really bad accident, or I know that sounds bad, you're waiting for something bad to happen, right? But you're not. But sometimes when those things happen, all of a sudden those people think differently, and it's sometimes you come to them, maybe just showing compassion at first, then might open that door again.
Sure. Send them some flowers. Pay them a visit in the hospital. Say, I heard that you were sick. I am very sorry. And then before you go, you might say, would it be okay if I pray for you? Not there. I'm not saying now, today, in the hospital. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. But as I go through life, in my private time, when I'm by myself, would it be okay if I pray for you? Now, you might have somebody in a rare blue moon say, no, I don't want you to pray for me. But I will tell you that 99 times out of 100, they will say, yes, that's fine. Thank you. And once again, that door may not be cracking open very much, but at least it's no longer completely shut. You may have taken at least a nail out, maybe a couple, and probably popped several. So it may not ever go anywhere, but little by little, you've got an opportunity there to take, and hopefully we do our best to take advantage of it. Anybody else? Okay, let's go back and see where we are. We've got about 5 minutes left. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 17. Paul said, do what without ceasing? Pray. Remember? Pray without ceasing. That's really important when we're dealing with people who have fallen away. And it's easy. Just so many things come up in life, and life can be at such a hectic pace, but we should be willing to pray on a regular basis for the lost. I probably don't do this as much as I should. In fact, I'm sure I don't do this as much as I should. But if you're praying for someone who has fallen away, and that person has family members who are still Christians, you think it might be encouraging for the family member that has the relative that has fallen away to let that family know that you're praying for the family members that have gone by the wayside? I think that would be encouraging. I think that would be a really good thing to do. But oftentimes, as what Teresa was indicating a little bit ago, we can have members who have loved ones or friends who've fallen away, and they might be inclined to think, well, nobody but me is mindful of the family members that have drifted away. Well, that's probably not true. But they will probably continue to think that unless somebody comes along and says, hey, by the way, your family member, I've not forgotten about him or her or them, and I continue to pray for him. I think that would be encouraging to let people know that as we do that. So that's just kind of free for the day. Anything that you want to add or ask on that line of thought? Okay, let's pick up with two more references here. Well, let's make it three. Luke 10 and verse 1, Galatians 6, 1, we'll highlight that again, so our other reference will be Acts chapter 8, 20 to 22. Luke 10, 1, who wants to be headed that way? Gary, thank you. And then Acts chapter 8, verses 20 to 22, who wants to pick up that last one for the class? Acts 8, 20 to 22. All right, Steve. Gary, when you're ready, Luke chapter 10 and verse 1.
After these things, the Lord appointed the other 70 also, and sent them two and two before his face into every city and place, whither he would come.
Okay, the Lord may have had a number of reasons for sending the disciples out two by two. We've talked about the fact before that that is still a good policy for a lot of reasons. In fact, talked to Beth not too long ago, a couple days ago, and she said that the military, at least the Air Force, is changing its policy. They used to send people out to various places as individuals, but now they're trying to send at least two man teams out when they deploy people to various areas. Now, I'm not sure why that change has come about, why they're trying to do that now, since that policy has been in place for a number of years as far as maybe just sending one guy, but they're sending people out two by two. Why, when it comes to trying to restore the fallen, could it be good to send out two people? All right. Sometimes you want a witness. A person who has fallen away might try to make some claims that are false. And if you've got a second person there, if you're the one trying to restore the person, a witness can sometimes be helpful. Why else? Gary?
When you're trying to persuade or convince someone of something, sometimes it's nice for you to be able to take a break and let the other person talk. It's easier for them to process sometimes two individuals instead of one that just keeps going.
Okay, that's true. You think you could play good cop, bad cop? Well, that happens with the police department. Sometimes it happens with parents, doesn't it? You be the good cop today, I was the bad cop yesterday, that kind of thing. And you can sort of tag team. What about differences in personalities? Remember we talked about 1 Corinthians 4:21. You have the rod and you have the person over here who is a little hesitant to use that. Now, if you have two guys who go and they both have hammers, that might not be the best set of circumstances. If you have two people go and, you know, they're unwilling to be tough when cases need to be tough, that's also not going to be too good. If you've got two people that just love to talk, that's probably not going to be good. If you've got two people who don't like to talk, that's probably not going to be good. So if you can balance out two people, you know, this person has strengths that this person does, the weaknesses of this individual are offset by this individual, just ideally like a marriage, you know, the woman, you know, man come together and they complement each other. If you can have that kind of arrangement, that might not just be two men. Do you think that a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, could be effective in going out and trying to reach someone who's fallen away? Yes, because if the man decides that he's just going to start, you know, pummeling the fella, what might the wife be able to do? Yeah, calm him down and say, hey, let's put those horses back in the barn. And it could be reversed. But very, very helpful sometimes to have two people go. That's not always possible, but in many cases it works. All right, after we go, Acts chapter 8, verses 20 and 22.
But Peter said to him, your money perish with you, because you thought that the gift of God would be purchased with money. You have neither part nor portion in this matter, for your heart is not right in the sight of God. Repent, therefore, of this your wickedness, and pray God that perhaps the thought of your heart may be forgiven you.
Did Simon have any question as far as why Peter and John were talking to him? None at all. I mean, he knew exactly why they were discussing things. When we go and talk to people about their wayward condition, do they need to know why we're there? Yes.
Do